I'm talking to my mom and dad and my dad, and it's just like they're talking about my, you know, that now I'm starting to reemerge into the dating pool kind of thing. And my dad's comment is, "What's wrong with you? You need to just tie your dick in a knot." And
To do what? What's that gonna get you?
I won't, I don't know, so I won't chase women, whatever.
Doesn't he
That
want you
was
to
his
chase
thing.
women rather than sitting around
No.
and
No, he doesn't. He thinks it's going to, but as I told my mom, she goes, "Well, your father wants to know what your problem is." I said, "Well, I know my father's, because he's my stepfather. I know that he didn't do it any better than I did until he found someone that would be married to him for decades."
I'm Don Hall.
And I'm David Himmel.
And this is the Literate Apecast.
Uses bad words. If you don't like bad words, maybe you shouldn't listen to it.
You know, you said something. We were talking on the phone the other day, you know, I was talking about my, you know, we were just kind of on that relationship thing. You were, you know, you're trying to process sort of the divorce and the new relationship and,
Yeah,
you know,
I'm in a weird place. Well, it's not a weird place. I think I'm in the place. I'm in exactly where I should be from a healthy perspective. Still, like the divorce, it's been over a year since we had the conversation. We're finalizing financials and that kind of shit.
Yeah, all that bullshit.
We continue to have conversations that relitigate the marriage that doesn't do good for anything. Although the last one we had was, I guess, a productive conversation. But yes, yeah, so I'm like I'm dealing with that and the devastation of rebuilding myself through that whole thing. I've gone through my sexual bender.
You see, you know, you got to do that. You
You
got to
know,
do that.
I did that. I'm done with the distraction, with women as distraction. And I found myself a girl who
A woman, not a
a
girl.
woman.
I find girls, you find women.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, this woman that I found is only 5 years older than your girl, so you
Oh,
know.
okay. All right. So then, so yeah,
But
then
I guess that's the difference between a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old girl. I don't know.
no, we're not going there.
Well, 17 is legal in
No,
Illinois.
but I
12 is
said,
not. That's.
yeah, all right, that's fair. I said
But yes,
something.
like
I
I'm at
said,
this. But yeah, so like I, as I'm looking at all these relationships, and I found this woman that I'm into, and she's really into me, and it's like we're approaching things very differently. So like every engagement that I have with her, it's not a compare and contrast to past
no,
relationships.
it can't
It's
be. It can't be. Yeah.
okay, and well, not every engagement, but like, you know, when we have the conversations, like the
Yeah.
serious stuff, it's like, what am I learning? Am I doing this differently? Is this the same thing? How can I be better? What have I learned? How can I apply it to be
Yeah.
better? And it's different. Like relationships, people are different. This girl, woman is very different than every other woman. Well, not every other. I mean, they're all women. You know, they still can't drive.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Wow.
But you know what I mean? Like
Yeah. Well, I
it's a
said
lot of
something
thinking. There's a lot of thinking about relationships, and you're on a different side of
different
things.
track.
But
You know,
girls are on our
you
mind, man. We might as well be
you're
14 again.
Yeah, you kind of fast. You're kind of in a fast track because of the way things unfolded. I kind of went into a cave for a while, and I'm just emerging from said cave. And one of the things that I said this the other day when we were talking,
Well, I
I said
think,
that
sorry, I'm sorry. Let me
let
just stop you there because I think, just real quickly, I think that if I didn't have kids
yeah.
and my ex had moved out right away,
Yeah.
I think I would have gone into
The
the
cave.
same place. I think I would have gone to the
Yeah,
cave because
yeah.
I did that the last big breakup I had, right?
Yeah,
And I had to
yeah,
be
yeah.
tested. So I didn't have a choice. I couldn't go into the cave.
Yeah, yeah,
But
yeah. That
yes.
totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. But no,
Okay,
I said
sorry.
we
Continue.
were talking about this, and it's one of the things that I've been thinking about in terms of sort of any relationship, because I'm now looking at relationships and I'm looking at women, you know, so to speak. Not so to speak, I'm looking at women.
Yeah, no, you,
And I'm kind of in a in an interesting, I don't know if it's a situationship or not, but whatever the fuck it is, you know,
Everything's a
she,
situationship.
yeah, well, whatever. I, you know, like I said to her, situationships seem to me, based on my cursory research, that like the safest, lowest risk way of having a relationship without actually having to put any skin in the game. And that's okay. You know, it's whatever. But no, one of the things that I realized, and I was thinking about this, is this is actually, let me read you this. This was one of my I believes for today. In fact, one of my I believes for today. And, you know, just thinking about this kind of stuff. And this was what I, hold on, let me find it. This is what I wrote. I believe that in any relationship, there are two individuals, both living their own lives independently, and the us. The us is its own thing and requires mutual attention to flourish. The us flourish. The us is resistant to power or control, is a shared space, and requires flexibility and care. It needs sunlight and water to grow, and in the absence of nourishment, withers and dies. This is why so many marriages end in divorce. And I was, I mentioned that to you, that's kind of something I hadn't really considered. But when looking at sort of the fact that I've had three failed marriages, it's like, all right, so, you know, you get into the thing is like, how, what happened, you know, and they're all different in their own way. But one of the things that I'm recognizing is that when it comes to marriage, and I can only speak specifically to my own experience, but, you know, there is, like I said, there's the independent, each person is living their own life. You can't fully know anybody 100%. You can't fully give yourself over to someone 100%. So you've got two people that have determined, I'm going to walk next to you. We're going to walk parallel. We're going to walk this direction, right? And you both agreed we're going to rock this direction. And then at some point, and this is my visual, you reach out and you hold her hand. That hand, that grasp represents something. It's a third thing. It's a different thing than the two individuals living their own independent lives. That handhold is the us. That's the couple, or whatever you want to call it. And without focus, you know, you can't let go of your own individual life. If you try to give over your individual life to the us, then there's a power imbalance. And that's not an agreement that, and sometimes that works. With the marriages that last decades and decades and decades, both individuals have said, I'm going to put all of my autonomy into this us. And that's going to be a thing. But what that does is it means that you don't have your own identity. You don't have your own personality. You don't really have your own journey, because you've decided you're going to subsume your own identity into this us. Most people don't do it that way. They've got their own thing. I think about my first marriage. You know, we moved to Chicago. My independence was I wanted to live in Chicago. I wanted to do theater. I wanted to do music. I wanted, you know, I was embracing and living in Chicago fully. She did not want to live in Chicago. She didn't. And so what that did was it created sort of a power imbalance where I was in control of the direction we were going and didn't bother to really consider that she had independent dreams of her own and she wanted to go her own way and that kind of stuff. And because of that, I mean, we lasted 12 years. So it's not like it was just, you know, a fucking horror show, but there was absolutely a power imbalance because I held very strongly to my independent goals and my direction I was going. And she let my goals subsume her into the us, and she didn't have any, place to go. So when we finally split up, she went off in her own direction. You know, she became a semi-competitive ballroom dancer, which was the weirdest.
Really?
Yeah, no, dude. She basically, Deanna, when we got divorced, two things happened, because she and I had ongoing, like toward the last couple of years of our marriage, ongoing sexual dysfunction. You know, we couldn't have sex without her having great pain. It was not satisfying. It's like, so we went to different therapists and that kind of bullshit, which is one of the reasons why I think therapy is a bunch of shit. But again,
Jesus,
my own
Christ, that opens up a box. All right. Let's
we've had that conversation. Anyway,
I don't think we have.
Well, anyway, so, you know, we did that. And then when we got divorced, the first thing she did was she fucked our neighbor and you know, apparently it was just transcendent, because, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not broken. You know, it just was Don and I. And then she went off. There was this guy in college who was completely in love with her. during college, and she was my girlfriend, you know, that kind of thing. And he kept, even once we got married and moved to Chicago, he would call about once a month. And if I answered, he was very cold, didn't want to talk to me, wanted to talk to her. And then she'd get on the phone with him and they talked for like an hour. And then we get off the phone and kind of, you know, in sort of a pitying way, kind of talk about, you know, it's like, well, this is how he's doing. And, you know, and so he, over the course of that time, got massive cancer.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Did serious chemo, lost one of his legs, lost all of his hair, like every shred of hair on his body was gone, and gained 300 pounds. Okay. We got divorced. She went to Arkansas and she married him. Okay. And then a year later he died, you know, I don't have any fucking clue. That was not ever a conversation she and I had, but you know, he died. And then she ended up becoming, again, very unusual, a semi-competitive ballroom dancer, which was not the person that I was married to. I mean, I know where that came from. And then she found a guy that she married, and she had a couple of kids and moved to Oklahoma and teaches it. So she's very, very happy. But she went on a different track. I was on my track, and I wasn't going to let that go. I absolutely wasn't going to let that go. And so I can look at that and go, okay, there was three entities, except that I was in control of the third. And when you have anyone that is in control of the third, you're going to have a power imbalance. And but when I was talking to you about it, you went, God damn, we're terrible at relationships, but we're really good at relationship advice.
Yeah. Yeah. We're really good at it. I mean, we can only
follow our own fucking advice.
Do as I say, not as I do. I mean, the thing is, when you're in the shit, it's harder to pull your head out of it. Because if I can go back into my marriage and, you know, play it out the exact same way that it played through, all the things happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I could follow my own advice, it would play out completely differently, because I would make completely different choices, because I would know, oh, this is where you need to just like chill and consider where she's coming from, or consider that, you do sound kind of like a lunatic right now. Take a breath. Yeah, but we can't do that because when we're in it, it's just, and this is not unique to us. This is just the human way of doing things. Those that can follow their own advice have transcended beyond the level of humanity. They are somewhere between humanity and deity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do that. I'm in search of that. I would love to get to that point in my life. I'm not there yet. I do it with my kids too. You do it with your kids, you know?
Yeah. It's,
I mean, shit, last night, what did Harry do? He did something, and I was just, you know, it was a long day, and I was tired, and they were tired, and whatever, we're having dinner, and he did something. I don't even remember what it was. It was so not a big deal. And I just went, God, Harry. And I like kind of threw the towel that I had, you know, a towel over my lap for dinner. And I just kind of threw it down and as soon as I did it, I went, well, that's not good, because the boys are going to see that. They're gonna be like, when you get annoyed about something, you throw things. I've been telling Jake for the last 3 weeks, don't throw things, stop throwing things across.
And then you,
and then I do it, and I know better, you know, like, and I'm 45, like I'm not two. But we just sometimes.
This is it. Well, it goes to the heart of that birthday thing that I do every year, where I write down everything I've learned. Mm-hmm. And if you look at one point, my rock star goddess mentioned, you know, when I told her that I did that, she was like, "Well, do you have that sort of compiled?" Which I don't. I think I've probably got, you know, probably 24 at my mom's house in a box, you know, that were all handwritten. And then everything else is digital. So it's like putting it together. But one of the things that I always recognize, and we talk about this every year, is like, okay, I keep, you know, there are certain lessons I keep learning over and over and over again. And I just, it's sort of like chipping away so that lesson starts to get learned. And, you know, I'm reminded of, from where I'm at right now, I'm reminded of, it was a Chicago actor that I knew. And he was a bit older. He was probably 15 years older than me, did a lot of W&P shows. And he was an alcoholic. I mean, there was no question he was an alcoholic. Yeah. And he fucked around on his wife and was, you know, always sort of glorifying the days in the 80s when, you know, he could get drunk and do coke off of tits. And, you know, I mean, that was kind of his thing, is that, oh, the glory days, right? The glory days, yeah, when everything was fucked up. And, you know, he never talked about that. And we had one, I remember one night we were sitting at a bar outside of Zebra Crossing Theater, which no longer exists.
Yeah, where the hell is that?
That was over, you know, the Jewel on Lincoln.
Yeah.
It was right across the street from the Jewel on Lincoln. And and so we were at a bar and it was late. Fuck, it was late. And we got into sort of a drunken conversation about what it takes when you are stuck in, and you know, that's the thing, is I just told him, yeah, you're totally, he knew he was an alcoholic. He knew it. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't necessarily ashamed of it, but he's also realized that his life was kind of going off the rails and he didn't really know how to stop it. And we were having that conversation about what does it take? Well, I want to say probably 3 months later, he was drunk and almost hit a kid at night in the street in his neighborhood in Gracelake, and like crashed his car. You know, he avoided hitting the kid, but ran his car into a tree. And just hit rock bottom, just hit the bottom of the fucking barrel. And that is what snapped him out of his stupor. It snapped him out of it. He stopped drinking. Yeah. He stopped fucking around and he kind of got his shit together. And it's a weird thing, because I think I've kept learning things about relationships, and it really took Dana to kind of fucking have me hit rock bottom. You know, that was, you know, it was very interesting. And I've kind of examined, obviously in the last 3 years, I've examined that ad nauseum, but, you know, it took me being an unwitting cuckold for 2.5 years with a woman that lied to me for 2.5 years to have my life completely blow up. She took all of my money. I was just fucked, like in every way, fucked. And except for the sexual way, I was not fucked sexually, but I was fucked every other way. And, you know, I kind of did. I went into my cave, and as I'm emerging from the cave, I realized, okay, there are definitely some changes in my MO that has to be addressed. And I have, and you know, I've had that conversation, is it's not as, you think you like to find out why you do things so that you can stop them. And my perspective is, I just want to stop them. I don't care why I do things. Then once I've stopped, then maybe I'll find out why. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, see, if I know the why, then I know how I can stop them, because I do this because of that.
Yeah.
Oh, this is happening. Okay, now don't do that. You would normally do that. Don't do that.
And see, my perspective is, if I already know I'm doing something that is bullshit and I catch myself doing it again, fucking stop. I don't care why I'm doing it. I know this is stupid and this is going to not benefit me. It's probably going to create a disadvantage. And one of the things,
but if you're finding the wrong women, why do you keep finding the wrong women?
You and I talked
about
this on
the
phone.
The wrong women. Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating, because, you know, it's like I've been telling myself, probably ongoing for the last 3 years, that what I have to stop doing is chasing women who don't like me, you know, because that's kind of a thing. It's like, you know, the women that like me, I'm not that interested in, and the women that don't like me, I see as a challenge. And one of the things after stopping, it's like, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to chase anymore. I'm not going to try to sell myself. I'm not going to try to convince. Either you're in me or you're not. It's the Mark Manson, fuck yes or fuck no. If it's fuck no, walk away. If it's fuck yes, stick and see what happens. And I mentioned this to you the other day. I was like, I realized that part of my weirdness and the reason I chase, and I have stopped doing that, which is good, but I'm starting to realize, oh, it's just that I want to be chosen.
Yeah.
You know,
We all want to be chosen.
Yeah. But then you mentioned, do you think that had anything to do with the fact that your mom was married six times? And I went, yeah, now that you say it, yeah, that's probably where that comes from, because I want to be chosen. So
you saw your mom throw the towel down 1,000 times.
Yeah.
This is the behavior that you pick up.
Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. And, you know, part of my thing is, you know, I know I've stopped it. I'm going, you know, I'm not going to do that again. I have zero interest in chasing. I could be chased, you know, but especially women that are resistant to choosing me, I got no more time for that shit.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, take your time, be patient and get your shit done and not worry so much about that. But then understanding that my pathology, so to speak, is that, you know, I find women who do not want to choose me. And then all I really want is for them to choose me.
Yeah.
That's ugly. And it doesn't work for me. And it never has worked for me. So it's sort of like we talked about the whole concept of marriage. I've gone from I'm never getting married again because I'm not good at it to I'm slowly getting to the point where I'm never getting married again because I think marriage for most people is an unworkable situation. It just doesn't.
Yeah,
it's a great financial arrangement for them. Financial arrangement has never worked out for me. But the idea is it's a great financial arrangement, but it is the death. For the most part, it is the death of the stuff that we love about being in love. The stuff we love about being in love is the unsurety, is the lack of security, is the lack of safety. It's that big risk. It's that big, bold fucking, you know, go for it.
It's the traumatic. I had a girl, I had a friend in college. I was going through a breakup. And my friend Tiffany said to me, she goes, David, I know you're hurting right now, but it's like, you'll be okay. Here's the thing. She was the wrong one for you. You need a girl that you can run through the rain for, which was this very romantic, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, Tiffany, right. And Tiffany was right. Like I needed, because I was such a fucking hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
That girl was very pragmatic. I have since become less romantic, but I'm now finding out, I'm trying to tap back into that romance. And
here's where
I'm at with this woman now. Can I just call her a girl? I feel weird calling her a woman. It sounds so...
Well, she is a woman. Come on, dude.
Yes, but she's... I'm not going to...
Aren't you a male feminist?
I am. But here's what
then
this male feminist is not going to do.
You don't call grown women
girls. If I were to put a label on it, I'm not going to call her my woman friend. I'd get my ass kicked. Every fucking overweight, blue-haired, non-binary lesbian would beat the shit out of me for saying that.
They're going to do that to you anyway, David.
Every single employee of Volumes Bookstore would beat the shit out of me for saying that.
Your woman friend?
Yeah, it's gross. It's gross.
No, they would love that. Are you kidding me? Let me put it this way. Would you say that the woman you're seeing right now is your girlfriend?
I wouldn't say that right now because we haven't
lived. Okay,
but
then for now, she is a woman. And then when she becomes your girlfriend, you can use girl.
That's what I'm getting at. So what is the difference between a girlfriend? Does that not reduce her down to that,
it does.
Girlish level? So would she not be my woman friend?
Well, she is your woman.
So if she becomes my girlfriend, then she's my woman friend.
Okay, fine. Then use that terminology.
I'm not going to because, like I said, it sounds stupid. Someone's going to kick my ass and they should.
Well, girlfriend sounds pretty stupid when it's a grown person. Oh,
shut the fuck up. All right. So
I'm just saying it.
No, I know you're just saying it because you're being, I see the look on your face. This is the, I'm just going to fucking be the contrarian face.
Yeah.
All right. So where I'm at with this girl is like, we're at that, it's all fucking new and exciting. And she's like telling her parents about me. Her parents are excited. It's like, it's very exciting. And that's what makes love great. That's what tricks us into sticking it through.
Yeah.
Because we're chasing that high. It's why babies are so like, I could fucking murder my kids sometimes, but God, they're so fucking cute. That's how they keep it from happening.
Well, the reason we don't eat our children is because they're adorable.
Yeah. And that's the trick is we are chasing. I can tell you this from my marriage. Like when things started to get sour, I held on to it. Because I was like, no, I got to go back to the way it was when it was new, when we weren't living together. All the stuff that made us fall in love with each other.
Well, and again,
it's
I go back.
Trick. It is
no,
a
it's
trick.
Not a trick. It's not a trick. What it is it's all an approach. And I guess, you know, going along with my whole concept of the two individuals go in one direction
and the thing is,
it's not about, I don't think it's about selfless. I really don't. This is the game that, you know, this is sort of the meme that we've been, the mythology, whatever that we bought. is, I guess, the whammy, I guess I have a lot of imagery that is sticking in my brain. And the way I look at it is, okay, if you've got one individual and you've got another individual, both individuals, and you've created a we, you've created an us, the us isn't work. It's just nourishment. And so I look at it as it's like a tree, you know, and a tree, if you give it two, it only needs, a tree only needs two fucking things to exist and grow, which is sunlight and water. Everything else is taken care of by the tree. So if you give it too little sunlight and water, it's going to wither and die. And if you give it too much sunlight and water, it's going to fucking drown and die. So it's really not work to provide sunlight and water to a tree. That's not, it's not like you have to work really hard to do it. It's not a sacrifice to water a fucking tree and make sure it gets sunshine. It is a matter of making sure that that nourishment of that thing is a priority in your individual walk. And if it's not a priority in your individual walk, then what you're going to end up doing is you're going to starve it and it's going to die. On the other hand, and I think that's what a lot of marriages do, is like you got your tree. And in the early days, it's so much fun to frolic around the tree. Look at our tree. It's growing. It's so sweet. And it's going to be a big oak one day. And oh my God, you know, and then at a certain point, the concept, either one person is trying to nurture the tree and is resenting the fact that the other's not, or, you know, or both just decide, fuck this. If they're not going to, you know, water it, fuck off. I forgot to water it and they're not even bothering. And so that starts to happen. And then the tree dies. On the other hand, when you have, look at our new tree. Let's just spend all of our time fucking watering our tree. Eventually you drown the fucking tree and it dies. So either way, it's about balance. It's about a sense of priority. It's about saying this tree that we have created together. And this is where, you know, you're trying to find the hopeless romantic. What I went into a desert, literally a desert of romance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now all of my romance is back. I mean, it's what's so funny about it is, you know, you and I talked about this. It's like, you know, you were worried, I was worried that I would never get my personal optimism back at that time. You know, I was really in a dark hole.
Yeah.
Well, that came back gradually, right? That's just kind of come back step by step, brick by brick. My self-respect, gone. That's been coming back piece by piece. The romance, the hopeless romantic was nowhere to be found. It was gone. I thought I was broken. And then I met this woman, not a girl, a woman, and it all came back, not just a little bit. It came back like a fucking hurricane.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, this is fucking, I forgot I even, this is a blast. And yeah, I enjoy this feeling. And, you know, as long as I can keep myself in check, because the drama, the way my drama comes out is I suddenly become a middle school girl. And it's like, oh, I've got to cut myself and my life is up. It's like, if I can control that part of it, just kind of compartmentalize that shit, the rest of it's just fun, you know? Yeah. And I like, the thing is, I like being a hopeless romantic. I am always going to be a hopeless romantic. That's just who I am. It's just who I'm going to be. And I'm happy to have it back. So I will never put myself in a position where I will let a woman destroy that, because I thought Dana had destroyed it, and it wasn't. It just kind of went into deep, deep fucking hiding, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, now it's back out. And that I guess that's the thing, is like, you know, I look at it, it's like, all right, I know I'm not planning on getting married again, not because I'm not good at it, but because I'm ceasing to believe that institution serves me in any way, shape, or form. You know, because if the thing is I'm a hopeless romantic, then I got to be on the hook to be a hopeless romantic, which means I got to focus on the tree. I'm still going to focus on my shit. I've got tons of shit to do, and my own survival and my own hopes and dreams and shit that I want to accomplish in my waning days. However, I like focusing on that tree. I like taking some time with that. It's fun. My trees are great.
Well, that's the problem with marriage is that people think of it as a destination.
Yeah.
Once you get married, you've locked that shit down. You've arrived.
So you've got a tree. And
you still got to fucking. You still got to water the fucking tree.
You got to water that goddamn tree.
You got to make sure that it's getting the sun that it needs. You got to. Yeah,
it's
too many people do that.
Well, the concept is that that being a couple is sort of like you said, it's like a destination. But the fact is, it's a living, breathing thing, and that living, breathing thing requires nourishment. And if you stop, you and I've talked about this before, but I years ago, went to Branson, Missouri for family Thanksgiving. My half sister and her husband own a place in Branson, so we decided we would have the whole family side. And I said, I told my mom, I'm only coming to Branson if I get to choose the entertainment. And mom went, oh, okay. And everybody agreed. All right. Then Donnie's going to, he's going to figure out what shows we're going to go see. And I went through and I picked the shittiest looking shows I could find, the cheesiest bunch of bullshit. Cause I thought if I'm going to Branson, we're all going to see the crappiest bullshit imaginable. Right. And we saw a lot of crap. But then the last one, right before I was getting relieved, I said, we're going to Yakov Smirnoff's theater because he's got a theater with a great big giant, what a country. He's got a great big giant head that talks to you when you walk in. It's his head. This is the shit. It's just like the cheesiest.
Is he still making Cold War 80s jokes?
Here was my experience. Because I thought this was going to be like the crowning achievement of shit.
The liberation of those people in the USSR, whatever that meant, was like the worst thing for his career.
Well, this is the thing. And this is, I'll never forget this. It's because we went in and everybody was like, oh, this is going to suck. Everybody knew it was going to suck. And one of the things I didn't realize is that the Star Spangled Banner has multiple verses. There are a lot.
Yeah, there's like seven of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the top of the show, we had to sing all seven. That was the beginning of the show, was us singing all seven. Then, it was just his show. It's whatever. So then all of a sudden, there's this screen. There's a screen. And then there's this Paul Harvey thing, which has nothing to do with I don't know what. Again, it's like.
Like the radio host?
Yeah. It's Paul Harvey, A Day in History, this kind of thing. And it basically is the story. He tells a quick story. It's probably a 5-minute reel. But it's basically that when 9/11 happened, I swear to God, I'm not making this shit up. When 9/11 happened, there was no tribute that a year after 9/11 happened, nobody had constructed some sort of memorial to those who had fallen on 9/11. And then this artist put together $100,000 and made on the building adjacent this giant heart to sort of, it was this thing, this monument, since in the absence of any real monument, right next to Ground Zero.
In Branson.
Oh, no, this was in New York. In New York, this huge heart with something on it, and it was this artist's way of saying, no, we don't have a memorial yet, but a year later we need to have something. And it turns out that artist was Yakov Smirnoff.
Shut the fuck up.
Okay, so now I'm going, what in the fuck is happening? So then the first act of his show is him basically doing, what a country. He's doing his shtick. He's doing his 80s jokes. He's making fun of himself.
Is it the same joke, or has he updated it to like mock America versus mocking Russia?
No, he mocks Russia. He does not mock America. He is 100%. He is the most patriotic. It's the most patriotic show you're ever going to see in your life. It is. And it's cute because, he's still doing his shtick and you kind of go, all right, none of this is funny. And it's kind of sad, but then you get to the intermission, and you get the intermission. You go out and you go
he's
back.
He's got a fucking intermission.
Oh yeah, dude. Because there's
how
a reason
long is
for
this
it.
Show?
It's like a 2-hour show. So you got
oh
an intermission.
My god.
Oh no, it gets better. So the second half of the show, we have another voiceover. And it's not Paul Harvey this time, but it just basically tells you that since the 80s, one of the things that Yakov Smirnoff did was he went through and he now has a doctorate in marriage counseling. I swear to God, I'm not making this shit up.
This is the greatest.
I never saw anything like it. And so the second half of the show is him pulling couples up from the audience and walking them through his theory
Are these plants? Or are they like?
No, these are real people, real couples that have agreed to, you know, like when they come.
Oh, okay. Show, okay.
Yeah. You know, they sign a waiver, that kind of shit. And they get up on stage and he does marriage counseling with them. And this is the whole second half of the show. And his whole concept is, I even bought the fucking, is a magnet where you have four, like five pieces of the magnet. And, yeah. And it is, it's you, it's me. And then the connectors are gifts. And he's all, his whole theory is that to keep your marriage, you know, because he's definitely focused on marriage, to keep your relationship alive, you have to consistently be giving each other gifts. And they have to be, you know, it's the gift of laughter. It's the gift of empathy. You know, he's not talking about buying people shit. It's about giving your partner gifts every single day. And
it's not that nice. Yeah.
It's the fucking bomb. Yeah,
that's exactly
and I walked
it,
out.
Yeah.
I walked out of that fucking theater and I went, well, fuck me. That was not the crowning achievement of shit. That was one of the most inspiring, lovely fucking things I've ever seen. I want to fucking take this guy home and just hug him. I just want to hug the guy. So it was like,
oh man.
Yeah. And so, I still have that magnet and I use that magnet and it is, to me, it is a simple reminder of his whole perception, which is, your gifts are watering and sunlighting your tree. It's just such a simple fucking thing. And it's not hard. It's not work. Everybody talks about how a relationship is hard work. It's really not hard work. As long as both parties can maintain their autonomy individually, but still agree that this tree in between them has to be maintained. And if you both agree that it has to take a priority and you both give that tree the gifts it needs, then the fucking relationship grows and flourishes. And that, I've just not seen anything since Yakov Smirnoff that has made a better impact, which is why, quite frankly, which is why Dana and I did the Monthiversary. The Monthiversary was my way of watering the tree. And for those that don't know what the Monthiversary was, is that we were married on the 12th. So every 12th of every single month, we would check in, we would have a date, and it would be, you know, we would ask the question, how's married life? And then we would have a serious conversation about how things were going. I still think that's a great motherfucking idea.
It is.
The thing to make sure you have to understand is that if 2.5 years of doing those of 32 month anniversaries, one partner is lying through her teeth about everything.
Yeah.
Then at the end of it, you feel like you've been watering a tree that's already been cut down. You're watering a stump and didn't even know it. And that was kind of where I was at. So it's like, all right, making sure that there's some honesty, that there's some real, you know, because for 5 years that seemed to work pretty well. And I like that idea. So I will, if I get into a long-term relationship again, and I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but if I get into a long-term relationship again, I don't know if I'll call it Monthiversary, but that regular check-in and that how are we watering a tree? How's our tree doing? How's the tree doing? Does it need some pruning? You know, do you need to weed?
I tell you what,
if
I get married again, Yakov Smirnoff will be officiating the wedding.
And now, Worsack of the News.
You know what they say. Don't count your chickens before they vote. More than 165 lawsuits are already shaping the 2024 U.S. presidential election.
I'm telling you, Biden's going to be president until 2026.
Biden?
Because he's the president right now, and they're not going to be able. And if they cannot solve the election, he remains president until someone can succeed him. Fucking Biden's going to be president for another 2 years because they're going to be fighting fucking battle.
He'll die. Kamala will become president.
And then she'll automatically become president. And then she'll have to officiate whether or not she continues to be president with all these fucking lawsuits. Jesus Christ. What a country. What a country.
speaking of chickens, Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi are having to go to extreme measures to care for their chicken flock.
So what extreme measures do you have to give them food and fucking leave them outside? What? What's the
I'm
big
glad
deal?
You asked. Let me just read a little bit from this story.
All right.
This is from Yahoo. This
of
is
course
from Yahoo News. This was sent to me right before we jumped on the show to record from Brian Beardmore over in the Sack Pack. Ellen DeGeneres and wife Portia de Rossi are completely devoted to the flock of chickens they've been raising, but their chicklings are starting to test their patience as the couple can barely get any sleep due to constant clucking.
What the fuck?
Ellen and Portia love them because they are cute, but they're also wondering if having chickens as pets was such a good idea. That's why they're giving away eggs and chickens. It's become way too much for them.
But here's here's the thing. The reason babies are cute is so we don't eat them. Chicks, on the other hand, make a great fucking meal. So eat the fucking chickens. Eat them.
In Texas, being autistic makes you an R word. All evidence points to Robert Robertson's innocence. Texas still plans to execute him.
Oh, yeah. Now I read about this. And there's just a million. There's a million. Not a million, but there are very, very serious prosecutorial errors, including, I believe, that the prosecutor has said, no, he's fucking innocent. I mean,
the lead detective who brought the case is like, I made mistakes.
This is all bullshit. And they're still going to execute him, which just says that
they love killing their R words down there, man.
They just love killing people. It's Texas. Come on.
Yeah. And finally, Jerry Seinfeld learns something in the end. Says he wasn't right about the extreme left.
Well, Jerry Seinfeld wants a career. He wants to continue to perform because, going after the woke, because they do kind of control comedy right now. So the only way he was going to get out of this fucking hole was if he said, nope, I was wrong.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be fun to see the Democrats have a crisis of self if Kamala Harris wins the Electoral College but loses the popular vote? Suddenly, the Electoral College is posing a problem for Trump.
I think it's only fair. I think it's only fair. If we're going to have the fucking Electoral College out there, I mean, that's why it's still there. The reason the Electoral College, which is an outdated, antiquated bullshit idea, it worked back in 1800, but it's just no longer a viable way of electing anybody. In fact, France, I mean, every major country that has this type of free election has gotten rid of the Electoral College, except for the United States. And the reason we haven't gotten rid of it is because, we want it to benefit our side. So every side, it flips back and forth. The Electoral College helps us and doesn't help them. Then sometimes it helps them and not us. So when Trump gets the Electoral College, but not all the popular vote, well, then everybody on our side says, we got to get rid of the Electoral College. As soon as Harris gets the Electoral College, but not the popular vote, then everybody on their side will say, we got to get rid of it. And we're going to go, no, you can't get rid of it because fuck you. And that is why we still have the fucking Electoral College.
This is a great story. It's in Slate. It breaks down in probably the most basic way that I've found how the Electoral College works and like why it exists.
It's just
a good thing to, because it is a complicated, convoluted, antiquated way of doing things. And finally this week, this guy really, really just can't win. Former Bears quarterback Jay Cutler arrested for DUI gun charges after offering $2,000.
Yeah. Well,
so $2,000. Let me just clear it up. Did you hear about this?
He
rear-ended. He was drunk, rear-ended somebody, offered to pay the guy $2,000 not to call the police. And the guy was like, we got to call the fucking cops. Come on.
Yeah.
Fucking Cutler.
Well, and this is what I always say. I always think it's one of the reasons why I am not a fan of professional sports. One of them is I just find it dull. But another reason I think is hysterical is that we have a national pastime where at least 3/4 of the players are fucking wife abusing, domestic abusers, gun-toting motherfucking criminals that are making millions of dollars, and because and they cannot just stop being criminals. They're just going to keep being fucking criminals. Like, what did you think was going to happen if you give a motherfucking thug millions of dollars to beat the shit out of other thugs? And then he goes out on the street. Of course he's going to fucking get drunk and try to buy somebody off. And then of course he's going to have gun charges. And of course they're going to punch their wives. It's just going to happen. I don't want to watch those guys win.
You know what? You know what sport needs to be turned into a professional sport? Is pickleball. Because to your point, pickleball, you won't have any criminals in pickleball because everyone who plays pickleball is too much of a pussy to be a criminal.
Quote of the week to ponder as you consider life's most pressing choices.
The quote of the week is, it's sort of along the lines of sort of how I like to live my life. And yes, you know, as my dad said the other day, you just need to tie your dick in a knot.
What?
My dad is, I'm talking to my mom and dad and my dad, and it's just like, they're talking about my, you know, that now I'm starting to reemerge into the dating pool kind of thing. And my dad's comment is, what's wrong with you? You need to just tie your dick in a knot. And
to do what? What's that going to
I won't chase women, whatever.
Doesn't he want you to chase women rather than sit around and.
No, he doesn't. He thinks it's going to, but as I told my mom, she goes, well, your father wants to know what your problem is. I said, well, I know my father's, because he's my stepfather. I know that he didn't do it any better than I did until he found someone that would be married to him for decades. You know, I just haven't found that person. I said, he found you. I haven't found one that it will be with me for decades. So, you know, I guess is that my dad, if you hadn't married him, would still be fucking up as much as I do. Yeah. And we laughed about that. So anyway, here is the quote. It's a Robert Greene quote. Timidity is dangerous. Better to enter with boldness. Any mistakes you commit through audacity are easily corrected with more audacity. Everyone admires the bold. No one honors the timid.
I like that. I certainly agree with the last part. I got a little twisted up around something about audacity.
Yeah, any mistakes you commit through audacity are easily corrected with more audacity.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like this quote.
Yeah, go big. Go big or go home. Fuck up.
Yeah, go big or stay in fucking bed. Yeah. No risk, no reward. If you don't go all, if you're going to half-ass things, then you're just a half-asser. So either you go all the way in and just fucking go for it, or I think that can be connected to almost any choices that you make in life. Go big or stay in bed. Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of something that my great uncle Ivan told me once. He was driving me home and I was like, oh, you can just stop here and I'll, because he lived like, this is when I was living on Lakeshore Drive. So this is gonna be a longer story than I initially wanted to be. But he lived on Lakeshore Drive. I was living on Lakeshore Drive at the time. He was in the Carlisle building. I was at 3450 North Lakeshore. And I was like, oh, you could just drop me off here. You're home. I'll catch the bus the rest of the way. And he looks at me like I had just said, like, you know, Uncle Ivan, I really like my Nazi girlfriend. I can't wait to become a Nazi myself. Like, he was so appalled that I suggested, just like,
yeah.
And he goes, no. No. It's like, he goes, when you drive someone home, when you offer to give someone a ride home, you take them all the way home.
Door to door.
And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I was trying to make your life easier, but no, yes, that's okay, perfect. And that stuck with me. And I don't know at what point it became this idea of, it's not just about taking somebody home. It's about doing, if you're going to do anything.
Do it right.
Fucking do it.
Correct. Yeah, do it all the way. Yeah.
So that's, I like that.
Yeah. And then, you know, and quite frankly, you know, right now it sticks out, you know, it's, you know, one of the jokes, is, my general manager at the auditorium theater, you know, cause I've got, I'm fucking killing it right now. I'm doing 17-hour days. I'm working the auditorium during the day, and then I'm doing the film festival at night, and I've got no sleep, and I'm fucking exhausted, and my fucking feet hurt, and I'm all, you know, all the shit. But I'm doing it.
Sound like a woman with children.
Yeah, I'm killing it. But one of the things that my general manager looks at me, she says, Don, you can slow down a little bit. You know, there's no need for miracles. And I said, yeah, but you referred to me as the front of house savior. I think miracles are implied. And we laughed about that. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like if I'm the front of house savior, I kind of it's incumbent upon me to work miracles. So, you know, but there's that. There's my love interest. There's all this stuff. It's like, fucking do it big. Timidity is for the fucking birds, man. Be bold or fucking stop doing it, because otherwise you're just half-ass and shit. So I'm enjoying the resurgence of that in me. So that's the quote.
I like it. I dig it a lot.
There are six things you should do this week.
My first thing to do this week is a read. I kind of already gave it away earlier. It's read, Suddenly the Electoral College is Posing a Problem for Trump. It's by Mark Joseph Stern in Slate. I just think it's an interesting article, and it picks apart the weird electoral college place that we're at with how close the polls are saying we are. But just, I think it just does a really good job of kind of breaking that down and simplifying it.
All right. All three of mine are watches. They are from the Chicago Film Festival. The first is a watch. It'll be coming soon to theaters. It is The Piano Lesson. It's The Piano Lesson. It's an August Wilson play.
The thing that no kid wanted to do from ages 8 to 14. And now it's like, I can't wait to go see that.
No. It's an August Wilson play that Denzel Washington
August
produced.
Jackson.
Yeah, August Jackson, that Denzel Washington produced.
The famed playwright, yeah.
The famed playwright. And his two sons, one, John David, is in it and gives a very compelling performance. And his other son, I think it's Malcolm, but I may be wrong, directed it. And they were at the opening night for the Chicago International Film Festival. And while I did not see all the movie because I was working, I caught moments of it, and it looks fantastic, and I really want to see it. So I'm recommending that to anybody. It'll be in theaters soon.
Okay, cool. My next thing to do this week is a watch. Probably not as good as what you're talking about, but it's still interesting. It is on Max. It is called Money Electric, The Bitcoin Mystery.
Oh, wow.
And this is basically like, who started Bitcoin? Who is the guy, the Socioto or something? I don't remember what his name is.
Yeah.
But it's like this fake mystery guy. But through that searching, similar to my Slate story, it breaks down what Bitcoin is, why it exists in a way that's just easier to understand, because it's all insane bullshit. But this makes it sound like, oh, this makes sense. The problem is greed, I think, is what fucked it all up. But
all right.
And I still think that Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, just as much as actual currency, is all bullshit. It's what we say it is. It's all pretend as much as it's real.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a good movie.
That good. My second thing is also at the Chicago International Film Festival. You can catch it at the New City 14 on Clybourne on Wednesday, October 23rd. It is a documentary. I love this idea. I wish I could see it. I will watch it eventually. It's called Slice of Life, The American Dream in Former Pizza Huts.
Oh my God, I want that.
Right? Doesn't that sound great?
On Wednesday?
It's Wednesday, October 23rd at the New City 14. Slice of Life, The American Dream in Former Pizza Huts. I just think this sounds like one of the coolest documentaries ever. It cuts to the heart of sort of like businesses that have gone out of business as, you know, both the internet has taken over and COVID kicked the shit out of everybody. And it's just a documentary about two guys who have taken businesses and taken old Pizza Huts and made businesses out of them. I think it's the fucking coolest thing I ever saw.
What time is it at?
I don't have the time. You have to look up. Okay. You can see it at chicagocinema.com. You'll be able to find her .org, one or the other. But all I know is that it is Wednesday.
All right. It is on my calendar now.
Yeah. It just looks great.
All right. My last to do this week is, it's another watch. It's on Netflix, and this is, it's a couple years old, but I just stumbled across it. It's called Detroiters, which stars, Tim Robinson, Sam Richardson. Tim Robinson had the show, or has the show, I Think You Should Leave. Sam Richardson was Richard Specht in Veep, as well as a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
These guys are good buddies. They're both from Michigan. It is, they play, they're advertising guys. It's so funny. It All is right. so funny. And it's
where,
so
where do you see this? Where is this?
It's on Netflix.
Okay, Detroiters.
There's two seasons. It's
because I love Tim Robinson. Each. I think Tim Robinson is one of the fucking funniest dudes I've ever seen.
He's hilarious. And him and Sam, I think Sam Richardson is a comedic genius. Like, I love these guys. It's so good. Yeah.
All right, Detroiters.
Highly recommend.
And my final thing, you can see it October 24th. At Thursday, October 24th, at the Music Box Theater. I'll be there. It is The Brutalist. This is starring Adrian Brody, Felicity Jones, Guy Pearce. It is the story of a right after World War II, this architect moves to Pennsylvania. He leaves Europe, you know, he's an expat, and he comes to Pennsylvania to basically find his fame, but there are many sacrifices along the way and great drama. I've been looking forward to this movie for a long time because ever since I heard about it, it just, everything just kind of checks some boxes, and I am thrilled. I may break my rule because I am the front of house manager of that theater and I don't watch the movies. I may fucking just watch the movie because I really want to see this movie. So The Brutalist, Thursday, October 24th, at the Music Box. I highly recommend it.
All right. And that's the show. Go water your trees.
You can listen to the Literate ApeCast on literateape.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you go to get that delicious podcast experience. If you enjoy the dulcet sounds of two white guys babbling about whatever comes into their stunted brains, leave us a review anywhere that, you know, reviews are left, and share it with someone whom which you have a dubious relationship.
For information about Literate Ape, go to literateape.com, of course, and check out the rest of our podcasts and our years of scribbling. Music on the ApeCast is courtesy of Mike Finopel and Locomotive. You can find them all over Chicago and online at locomotiveband.com.
The fuck?